Feelings are spontaneous reactions to an event. They just happen, and they're psychological pointers that can help direct you to the most effective action to take in any situation. Feelings are your basic resource for understanding what you expect, what you're thinking, and what you want.
Feelings, feelings, feelings. Look, many of our feelings are unpleasant, and I don't care if you're a man or a woman. You've got to shove them aside to get on with your life.
That's a natural reaction. And before I answer that directly, let me ask you to do something. Think back to when you expected a certain behavior from someone, and that person broke your expectation.
That's easy. I was supposed to have lunch with an important client last week, and he stood me up. I drove 32 miles to a restaurant, and he never showed up.
And how did that make you feel?
Angry and confused. Did he do it intentionally, or did he just forget? Either way, it was pretty obvious I didn't mean a whole lot to him.
You followed a natural human process. First, there was an event. You went to lunch, and your partner never arrived. Then you had an interpretation of the event. He doesn't like me or my product. And you had a feeling or two. You were angry and confused. Now, let's go back to our manager and Barbara. You've heard and read what's transpired so far. What do you think his feelings are?
If I were in his shoes, I'd be angry at Barbara, or maybe disappointed is a better word. How could she foul up like that when she's done such a good job for so long? Or maybe I'd just be sad that 18 years seemed to be going down the drain, and I'd feel bad for her as a person.
A moment ago, I said that feelings are pointers for what will happen. If the manager was angry, as you first suggested, what do you think might happen?
Well, there might be a really ugly confrontation.
Suppose he was disappointed.
The action might be softer. His approach might be, Barbara, I don't understand why your performance isn't up to par.
And sadness?
That might be, poor Barbara, she just can't hack it anymore. What am I going to do with her?
Thanks for your help. You've made the point that feelings will help drive an action. They make you react to others the way you do. In effective conversations, it's not necessary to splash our feelings over other people, but it's important that we know just what our feelings are and how we're using or showing those feelings. What we want to do here is intelligently apply everything we've done so far to an action plan. And we'll start to do that with four words. One is need. The second is want. And the third and fourth words are would like. The word need means a necessity. We need money, housing, food, health, shelter, and protection. The word want means a desire. We may want a larger car, or to be president of the firm, or an ice cream sundae. Even though those two words are synonymous in the dictionary, they really have two separate meanings for our purposes. For example, you may want to be president of your company. Would you act differently, make the same kinds of decisions, than if you decided that you needed to be president? Need implies a must-happen action, while want implies an I'm working toward it action. The phrase would like is more general than want. It's somewhat of a creative area in your thinking. I would like to be president leads to a totally different action plan than I want to or need to be president. Would like means I'm going to file this away for future evaluation or use. Suppose you were Barbara's manager. What need statements would you make? What want statements would you use? Going back to Barbara and her manager, what does the manager need?
I need Barbara to agree on a contract between us to change her behavior and attitude.
What does he want?
I want Barbara to accept criticism, to be productive again, and to rebuild our working relationship before one of us is fired.
The word want describes intention. What do you want to happen as a result of your action plan? Finally, what would the manager like to happen?
I'd like things to be the way they were. We understood each other and trusted each other.
The manager has worked through five steps. He has carefully and honestly defined the concern, listed the facts, identified his feelings, and separated his wants from his needs, from his would likes. Having taken these steps, the action plan becomes a rather straightforward process. The objective of the action plan is to formulate a performance contract with Barbara to adequately perform her job responsibilities. The steps to implement this action plan include, 1, a meeting with Barbara to present the analysis of her performance. 2, have Barbara make her own analysis of the issue. 3, compare Barbara's facts, thinking, and feelings to his own. 4, if Barbara's analysis differs to any great degree from his own, he'll request that she and he enter a written contract to complete specific objectives, such as a complete training program, and an understanding that if agreed-upon goals are not met, termination may result. The manager's complete action plan may be found near the end of Book 2. One of the most misunderstood parts of this 6-part process of developing accurate and meaningful conversation and communication is the role of feelings. Thinking is an objective process, and feelings are subjective. In organizations, especially ones that are highly structured and task-oriented, thinking is usually valued over feelings. What happens, though, is that a person or group functioning in this very organized setting and placing a strong emphasis on thinking runs a giant risk of making poor decisions because one of the most important elements in communication has been omitted.
What? Is this a sensitivity course? What do feelings have to do with effective decision-making and hard-nosed business decisions? Maybe they're okay for relationships, but certainly not for business.
That's a fairly typical reaction. But what happens is that feelings may be guiding your decisions. And if you're not aware of your feelings or won't admit to them, you may not be making the best decisions, like it or not. Think about a decision you made recently that involved a concern you had with another person. How did you come to your decision? Was it based solely on thinking? Were you aware of your feelings when you made the decision? This isn't an easy question, so follow along with a few examples. Do you remember the fellow who was sure the cleaning crew stole the petty cash from the accounting office? Remember, he theorized that they found a rusty screwdriver and couldn't resist temptation. He was totally in touch with his feelings. I think it's safe to say that he felt disgust for the cleaning crew and some happiness about being right about the potential problem with security. What's wrong, however, is that his feelings were based on opinion, not fact. That led to a misleading conversation, which falls into the category of gossip, rumor, and innuendo. That misleading conversation could then have led to an action decision such as firing the crew. The point is that when you're feeling something, be sure to check the facts prior to acting on those feelings. Another example, a manufacturer's representative, who we'll call Harry, told me that he had an inquiry from a client about a potentially large order. He called Matt, the sales manager of the manufacturer he represented, 4 times that day, trying to get prices for his client. Each time he was told that Matt would get back to him as soon as possible. By the 4th call, Harry was enraged and sent a fax hoping it would get Matt's or anyone's attention at the manufacturer's. By 6 o'clock, he left feeling quite hostile. He was going to call in the morning and let Matt or his boss really have it. In the morning, Harry found a message on his answering machine that sounded like this.
Hi, Harry. This is Matt. I'm sorry I couldn't get back to you yesterday. I was held hostage in a national sales meeting all day. It's 6:40 at night, and this is my first time up for air. I'll get to you first thing in the morning.
Everything went fine in the morning, but Harry admitted that he had come close to causing a scene for all the wrong reasons. It really had nothing to do with Matt's not getting back to him as quickly as he had hoped. He hadn't made any sales for them in a long time. He was embarrassed and defensive about it and was sure they weren't returning his calls because they were giving him a message. His feelings were based on opinion, not fact. Many people have difficulty identifying thoughts from feelings. Listen to these statements and choose the ones that are feelings statements.
I feel we should break for lunch.
I'm proud of my report.
I'm relieved to hear you're better.
I feel our relationship is good.
I'm uneasy about your decision.
The feeling statements are, I'm proud, I'm relieved, I'm uneasy. The other two statements are thinking statements. You can substitute the word think for feel in both of them.
I think we should break for lunch.
I think our relationship is good.
A feeling should be expressed directly. I'm happy or I'm disappointed. There's no need to say, I feel happy, since happy is a feeling. In fact, if someone says he or she feels happy or sad, it becomes a thought rather than a feeling. Listen carefully during a conversation and see if anyone uses the word feel. Determine if he or she is expressing a thought or a feeling. Feelings are terrific devices for measuring your reaction to something. The manufacturer's rep admitted that his feelings of anger were misplaced. He was angry at himself, and he needed to do something about it. If you use all parts of the six-step system for effective conversation, you'll shorten the psychological gap between you and the other party. When you're aware of your feelings and you understand them, you can dramatically reduce differences between yourself and your conversational partner. This six-step system is a key to open, sincere conversations. While it's not an absolute necessity when you're making small talk, it can be very helpful for larger occasions, such as dealing with problem employees, negotiating a raise, disciplining a child, or building a relationship. Do you remember Bob's salary negotiation with Marge? He was always in touch with his emotions and facts, and he used the conversation to get more facts. Bob did one other thing. He pressed for a commitment with his boss. He didn't just work through the facts, the history, emotions, and action plan on his own. That's good for sorting everything out, but it's not going to do you much good if you don't share it with someone else in the form of a conversation. Bob gained credibility in his boss's eyes because he communicated well. Credibility is the critical element in leadership and in building productive relationships. One last thought I'd like to leave with you is the gift of enthusiasm. We've made the point before that it's not necessarily what you say, it's how you say it. And nothing works more to persuade and motivate others than to communicate with them enthusiastically. Here is a lesson that Nate Rosenblatt, one of the course co-authors, learned early in his career.
I had an assignment to create a full-page ad for a national department store chain. Now, this was pretty hot stuff for a 22-year-old just breaking into advertising. I labored over the copy and artwork, putting in 16-hour days until I had what I thought was the perfect ad. With a great sense of excitement and anticipation, I walked into my boss's office with the finished layout. I was taping it to his wall when he asked me what I thought of it. Well, trying to be very nonchalant, I said, I think it's okay. What do you think? He said, what don't you like about it? Before I could answer, he gave me a lecture on enthusiasm. If you like what you did, he said, tell me about it. Get me excited. Stride into my office with confidence and poise and say, Don, look at this. Is this going to bring in traffic or what? I think I've created an ad that's going to move lots of suits. Tell me that this isn't going to be a hit. The message my boss gave me was that if you have something to sell, a product, an idea, a state of mind, you're not going to be very successful if you don't show your enthusiasm first. Enthusiasm is catching, he said. And when people see that you believe in yourself, they believe in you too.
There is a magic to enthusiasm, a positive feeling that will help you master the art and skill of conversation. If you continue to practice the skills you've heard in this course, you'll become a more successful, confident, and relaxed communicator. You'll get your ideas across effectively, and you'll get the results you want. I know that you've profited from this course, and speaking for the authors, I wish you all the good things you're about to earn with your new conversational skills.
Copyright 1995, Dove Audio Incorporated.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.